We are back for another great edition. Okada and me are back to the table to talk some wide receivers and running back vets today for a little, are we in or are we out? And like, I like to do this exercise to kind of get different perspectives. Now, Okada, we like to agree on most things, but then there's some things where there's certain players that we just don't see eye to eye. And I think last week's episode kind of displayed that.
That is true. Listen. There's a lot of things, you know, to understand or not understand properly about these players. And sometimes I'm going to miss them and sometimes you're going to miss them. And so the other guy's job is to help correct the straying of the sheep here and get us on the right track. I hope.
Yeah, man, because look, the fantasy streets, they have a voice too, and they're watching us and listening to us, and they're very loud about some of these players that we're going to be talking about today. So it's like, okay, let's iron it out. What are the fantasy streets saying? What are we saying? And like, how are we feeling? But of course, we need to start with some fantasy news to keep the people updated and in the loop of what's going on. And like, I don't know if you saw this on the timeline, but there's been some like concern or worry about Malik Nabers with this toe injury. Like, I don't think that it should be that big of a deal. No, like he should be ready for training camp.
From everything that we're hearing specifically on Nabers and this injury, it doesn't sound like it's a big deal. It's early on. There should be time to recover. The one thing I will say is that these toe injuries are some of my least favorite to hear, if not my least favorite to hear, besides hamstring. Hamstring's number one. Obviously, and concussion, if you count that, it's not.
I'm about to say the order goes concussion, hamstring, and then toe. It sounds crazy, but you would think the knee or ACL would be up there or shoulder injuries, but no, it's the toe coming at three.
Because with those ones, we know what's going to happen. If it's an ACL, we know what's happened. You know, this guy's going to miss X time. He's going to come back. He's going to be a little slow, and then year two will be great. We have a lot of data on that stuff. The data we have on these toe injuries, like, you know, turf toe type stuff, they always seem to linger. They always seem to crop back up. And it kind of makes sense, especially for a wide receiver. You're out there slamming your feet down on those toes, pivoting a lot. It's the kind of thing that I feel like can get re-aggravated kind of easily. So I do not like hearing the word toe connected to the word injury connected to a wide receiver. All that being said, am I going to change my ranking on Malik Nabers because of this, where he should go in drafts because of this? No, probably not. Maybe if I'm, you know, if I was tied between two guys and if they were back to back and Nabers was one of them and the other guy's perfectly healthy, this is a tiebreaker. But other than that, I'm not freaking out completely just yet. It's just something to keep an eye on because it's a toe.
Yeah. You know what? Like, I'm not worried right now. You know, if I hear this again, then, you know, all right, let me look a little more into this. I might have to adjust the rankings. But now it's June. It's literally summer just started. Training camp is far away right now. Like, Okada, I'm not really tripping out about this. And like, you hit the nail on the head with the toe injury. Like, I honestly want to move it up in the ranks of concern where it goes to number two over the hamstring things, because I feel like you talked about performance of pivoting, putting your foot in the ground and being elusive and being a guy that where that is Malik Nabers' profile. I don't want a limited Malik Nabers going in the first five picks of the draft. You know, like I kind of have to move him down in a way if I hear about this again. So it's one of those things that it's on the radar. We're not adjusting. We're not freaking out right now, people. Like we're just on the smooth sailing of just like, all right, Malik Nabers, he should be ready for training camp. Let's monitor during that time. Now,
fun as a like temperature check, and I know you're probably a little biased on the first guy, but I'll ask you anyways. So he's currently going in a little gap between Puka Nacua and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Would you move him below Amon-Ra because of something like this? Was he already way behind Puka for you, and this doesn't really change anything? Does that seem about right?
So in my rankings right now, which I'm going over because obviously training camp is on the way and then these rankings will change, but I actually have Nabers above Puka. Amon-Ra will be the third man in that group, being that he just had that knee injury. Well, not knee injury. He just had some cleanup in the knee over the summer now with, you know, with that being said and known with Ben Johnson out of the building, the whole culture change of, you know, the Lions right now, they're shifting through. That's where I have Amon-Ra right now. So I could see Puka and Nabers, you know, in August. I'll be flip-flopping them in the rankings. I want a piece of both of them, you know, this summer. So it's like I'm not going to go max, you know, shares on Puka and fade Nabers at all costs when they're right there back-to-back in ADP. It's like I kind of want a piece of both. But you have question marks on all three players that we named. I mean, Amon-Ra with the knee, I just said, Puka with his injury history, and now this toe that we hope we don't ever hear again. So that's just how I kind of have it laid out with that.
Checks out.
All right. So I definitely want to shift and stay on the same page at the Rams since you mentioned Puka, but Kyren Williams, man. He's been, you know, on my ish list, you know, for real life purposes, not fantasy. He's been amazing for fantasy. He's an RB1. But outside of the fumbles and everything else that I personally feel like, it feels like the Rams are coming to an agreement, moving towards a contract extension with Kyren. And this could be, you know, one of the things that a lot of dynasty managers are looking at, like, oh, thank God he's not on the move, because I don't know if Kyren can be as successful elsewhere as he is right now in LA.
Yeah, I had Kyren Williams as a sell in one of the FTN moves to make specifically for that reason, because Sean McVay's running back one is one of the best value spots you can find as a fantasy football player. And if Kyren were to go somewhere else, I think it would be detrimental for his dynasty value. So if he does sign a long-term contract here, I think that's probably a best-case scenario, and I think Kyren bumps up in the dynasty rankings a little bit and probably falls out of my sell category to some degree. I also do have concern about kind of his size and lack of explosiveness compared to the volume that he's had, and I think that volume might come down a little bit. That we might specifically see that in terms of 2025, because if they weren't going to extend him, they might run him into the ground. And if they do extend him, maybe they won't do that. So I wonder if maybe this is kind of a tiny knock in redraft. But for dynasty purposes, I think it's definitely a good thing. You want your running back to sign a second contract, A, with a team that drafted him, and B, for it to be the Rams and Sean McVay. So that would be a big win if it happens.
Absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head there with mentioning that this ain't a guarantee that he gets workhorse opportunities, you know, being with the fumbles and not being as explosive as the guys that he has behind him. So it's like, yay, dynasty, but redraft, you're like, okay, are we out of the clear right now? Like, is he going to be worth a top three, you know, top three pick? I mean, top three rounds to be rostered as an RB1? Like, these are the situations that go on in my head, you know, because I have the real life, like, investment in the Rams and him fumbling. Like, Okada, I'm squeezing my fist right now out of passion of just how angry I am when that ball hits the ground. And when you're so close to victory, I can't imagine Sean McVay or Les Snead going into the season after drafting Jarquez Hunter, who basically fits the bill and completes the equation that we need explosiveness out of the backfield, and have him sit on the sideline. I just don't see that being a reality for Kyren. So, you know, the moving towards a contract extension is great. You know, gives him security that he'll be involved in this offense. But I think we'll start adjusting his rankings as we get closer to August to see how this workload pans out. But let's transition to some not too great news for Jordan Addison with his DUI date set for July 15th. And that is right around the corner, Okada, where we may get an answer on what Jordan Addison may be facing. Because if this gets wrapped up in July and we're headed towards training, I mean, we're in the midst of training camp heading towards the season, and it's like, okay, so where do we drop him in the rankings? Like, is this concerning to you?
It's a little bit concerning. It's not like, oh my gosh, Jordan Addison's undraftable or knock him down six rounds kind of concerning. But, and I'm by no means a legal expert. I am a fantasy football expert, call an NFL expert, I suppose. Legal expectations, not my forte. What I do know is that if there is some kind of, or when this case wraps up, really regardless of what verdict occurs, the NFL can still suspend him for violating the substance abuse policy.
Yeah.
And I would expect him probably to get a couple games or so, maybe especially if there is a verdict that comes out of this that's not great. But also, just the fact that he's going to be distracted from camp by this whole situation isn't particularly encouraging. I wasn't the hugest Jordan Addison fan anyways. That tier of guys, I've sort of become a hater of that tier of wide receivers. Those are like the kind of skinny wide receiver twos who could absolutely never be the wide receiver one, but they'll still be good for fantasy and score points, but their upside's kind of capped, like him and Zay Flowers Chris Olave used to be in there. Now he's kind of dropped because of the injury. I'm sort of out on that range. I kind of rather go for upside or target a different position there. So I'm probably just going to use this as an excuse to avoid drafting him largely, even though I don't think it affects your like his ranking much necessarily. Yeah. That's just my personal.
So are you the person now, like you have already had in your mind, you're taking Jordan Addison off of your cheat sheet. Are you drafting Ty Felton as a stash? Jalen Naylor? Like these guys, like I feel like Jalen Naylor last season, he flashed and made some, you know, plays here and there. Not a full-time starter, not a KJ Osborne, you know, proven type of guy for the Vikings. But Ty Felton's a rookie. And the most I've seen, you know, pop off the tape with him is just his speed, his ability to break down field and make those big plays. I haven't seen much if he can hold water of Jordan Addison or even be on the outside counterpart of Justin Jefferson. But It's a situation where I want a piece of this Vikings offense because how they're able to spread the ball around and find fantasy relevant guys, like how we're mentioning Jalen Naylor 1 week or how we're mentioning KJ Osborne in the past when he was able to show up as a wide receiver 3. So I feel like, you know, these are actual guys that are going to be on the table for you, Okada. Like, are you stashing either one of these guys?
I'll answer it a couple different ways because it's a good question that's relevant depending on where you're playing. In Dynasty, I really like tucking those guys away, especially Felton, just for the upside, particularly because Addison is a repeat offender, and I don't love the situation there. Like, is this going to be an ongoing thing? We're going to have to deal with this again in the future. I don't mind stashing some upside in my dynasty leagues on the bench behind a guy with some question marks and in an offense where I trust at the very least the offensive coordinator and head coach, play caller, I guess, is a way to summarize that properly. TBD, how much we can trust the quarterback. I like him, but at the very least, I trust the coach and the play caller. Redraft, I honestly do not care at all about those guys, and I'm shifting any dip that I give to Addison to Hockenson and maybe Aaron Jones a little bit, because he's always been a very productive pass catcher. And it's often the case that when the wide receiver 2 disappears, misses time, etc., in an offense, the running back is actually the one who picks up a lot of the slack target wise. So I'm in on Hockenson and I'm in on Aaron Jones this year. I think that might be a spoiler or a tease. So those are the guys that I would bump up a little bit, and I do actually bump them up a little bit just with the in the context of the situation.
Yeah, so I've been on Underdog doing a lot of best ball drafts these recent weeks, man. And look, I've been taking a lot of TJ Hockenson. He's my number one overexposed tight end right now, and it's by accident. It's by accident, man, because on the last episode, we made the case for and against Sam Laporta, and it's literally those two at tight end 4 and 5 where I'm like, I don't know about Laporta because of the personnel change, but I do know and got this update about Jordan Addison facing a DUI citation, and that case is probably going to be resolved pretty quickly, and he could face suspension, where TJ Hockenson, he becomes the second option of this offense. So it's like, man, what do? We just wait and see. But we're going to take a quick break, man. I mean, look, we got a lot to talk about with these wide receiver vets and running back vets, man. Are we in? Are we out? The question mark players for the 2025 season and beyond. And we are back, man. The homie Okada spitting straight facts. Are we going to get the me, myself, and Irene performance back, man? Like, last week was amazing. Like, you really pulled that off, man, with the split personalities as a defender and prosecutor.
Listen, I don't know if we're gonna get it this episode, although there is one player that I'm kind of confused about. I'm hoping you can maybe clear it up. We'll bring the segment back for sure.
Absolutely, man. I think some folks out there like that, man. You having fun, man, and being creative as you are, man. You cut out a freaking check mark, colored it green in a red X and put it on your forehead, man. That is well freaking done, man. I got to give you your flowers. But, man, in or we out, man? Let's just start off the top, man. Stephon Diggs, man. He's made headlines, obviously. It ain't even a peak of summer yet, but he's out there living like a hot boy summer right now. But Stephon Diggs right now.
Ideally trying to make in training camp.
No, No, absolutely not. But we've seen the videos. We've seen the videos to him report. He looks good. He's moving. He's looking quick in and out of his breaks. But this is all in t-shirt and shorts here, people. So I'm not going to be oversold with this type of footage saying that I got to be able to move him up in the ranks. He is returning from injury, Okada, man. Are we in or are we out on Stephon Diggs, man?
So I was a little, I think I was out for a while, pretty much shortly after the signing through the pink product in the bag incident.
Did we ever find out what that was?
Nope, I don't think so. We're going to say cotton candy. You know,
cotton candy. All right.
They wanted a little sweet treat.
They just came from the circus. They just came from the carnival.
Exactly. I looked into it a little more in prep for this podcast, and I decided I'm in on Stephon Diggs. And there's a few reasons why. Obviously, he's coming off the ACL injury. That's not ideal, particularly early on in year one of that of the return. Usually these, you know, receivers and running backs, tight ends, they take a year or so to get back to full speed, full strength. And Stephon Diggs is not a spring chicken. So that doesn't help in that regard much either. However, for me, it is less of an efficiency question. And by the way, Stephon Diggs is just a very good wide receiver. So even 70% of Stephon Diggs is still not bad in terms of NFL leading receivers go. But for me, this is a volume thing. I do not see any world in which Stephon Diggs does not see 100 plus targets, maybe much more than that, as the lead receiver in New England. Four straight seasons with 150 plus targets for Diggs before he missed nine games last year. And he was on pace for 136 targets as the wide receiver two behind Nico Collins, who is a stud wide receiver one, or maybe you want to call him the 1B behind Collins 1A. Regardless, there was another stud there and he was on pace for 136 targets. He's always in that range. And now he's on a Patriots depth chart that has diddly bupkis else to throw to. Diggs is it. And I say that as a Kyle Williams fan and a Travion Henderson fan. Like there are some players with talent that they have added, but they're not going to threaten Diggs, I don't think, for the target lead in this offense. And that means he is well on his way to triple digit targets. He has not finished worse than wide receiver 18 in PPR points per game in 6 years. Last year, DeMario Douglas was the wide receiver 47. As the leading receiver for New England on 87 targets. The wide receiver 47 on 87 targets, and that guy's name is DeMario Douglas.
Pop Douglas.
Even you pop. You're telling me that even lightly hampered off the ACL Diggs isn't better than Douglas and isn't more likely to see close to double that target count than that target count? I don't think it's possible. I think the volume is key and king here for Diggs. And there's no way he doesn't return value because his ADP is so low.
So let me throw a bone in there real quick. And he's not on the rundown. So I what I'm hearing is that you're in, which again,
I'm in.
I hear you. Now, would it be Stephon Diggs or Brandon Ayuk? Please explain to me the difference in their situation, because like, who would you rather take off the draft board?
That's very interesting question, because I'm kind of been a little bit out on Ayuk recently. I didn't do the full breakdown for him for redraft like I did for Diggs for the in prep for this show, but I did do some research on him as a FTN moves to make article sell. Check out that column, guys. It's good stuff. Not biased. And I did not like what I found. So I'm kind of out a little bit on Ayuk, and I'm in a little bit on Diggs, and the ADP is close. So for me, it would be Diggs over Ayuk. And so, for the record, the reasoning is that Ayuk, I do not feel confident about the volume. There is a Juwan Jennings. There is a Ricky Pearsall who's ascending. There is a George Kittle. There is a CMC. I wouldn't be surprised if all of those guys saw as many or more targets than Ayuk. I mean, CMC is less likely because he's a running back, but the volume CMC is going to take as a receiver is going to be very high. So to me, that's like the reason I like Diggs at this price. And for the record, all these in or outs are at price. Are we drafting them where they're going in ADP?
Yeah.
For me, like the reason I'm in on Diggs, which is volume, is one of the main reasons I'm out on Ayuk. How do you feel?
Okay. That is true. I could see Diggs seeing a lot more volume than IU because there's less people that can threaten his talent. But therefore, you have utility over there with the 49ers where you have Kittle that has his role stapled. You have Juwan Jennings who's ascending to be third in Juwan, they like to call him. But I do see, you know, Ricky Pearsall carving out some type of role to where he could be fed targets and make an impact. And again, IU's returning back from a serious injury, man. And he had that slow start because of holding out and he was cold. Like, we haven't seen the best of Ayuk in probably over a season and a half now. So I'm looking at this situation like he may be the guy that needs to work back to get that staple in that offense where Stephon Diggs, he's the new guy in town. He's fresh off the boat with pink cotton candy. Like he's the guy that's going to be fed, you know? Like I'm just looking at this situation where if I'm looking for a wide receiver three, because this is the wide receiver, you know, dead zone where I think it begins. This is where I want to get proven guys, and I want to get guys who are going to see volume. And I could take that shot on Stephon Diggs because being that there is nobody there that I see getting over 80 targets in that offense that has the wide receiver role. It's definitely going to be Kyle Williams going to want to make a argument for that, but I think he's going to have more splash plays than actually be a reliable wide receiver, you know, for fantasy. So if you do want to dip and dive in this Patriots, you know, offense and have some fantasy assets, I don't see why not roll the dice on Diggs as a three who's going to see alpha volume where you're taking these guys are going in the first three rounds. Like, I get it. I'm getting it. We're in. All right. Yeah, we can agree on that.
One thing I'll add to there too, just based on what you said at the end, I feel like a lot of people are in on Drake May. A lot of people like Drake May for this year. And there's a little bit of rushing upside that's baked into that. Like he adds a little bit of rushing for fantasy. Yeah. That's nice.
But let's just hope that O-line is a little bit better than it was last year. Because he was running for his life. Like the rushing upside is there for, you know, he has that ability on the utility belt. But I don't want him rushing like how he was rushing last year because of that O-line was just god awful. Those are scramble yards, people. Those aren't like designed runs. This isn't like Drake May running out of the pocket on some Kyler and Lamar Jackson. He was running for his life. For his life. Like that's the issue there, like, you know, with that offensive line. So hopefully we're getting a better, you know, version of that where Drake May could sit back and launch those things to Kyle Williams and Stephon Diggs.
I think it can happen. I'm in.
It can happen. It's we'll see. You know, we have to put a hope and in prayer, you know, for that offensive line. But next up, man, it's like one of those situations where you look at the rundown, you want to do prep, and then I feel like I was trolled on this one. I feel like I was like, let me do prep. And then I'm like, the second guy, huh? Cooper Kupp is on the board.
Ooh.
Redraft ADP right now, eighth round, wide receiver 49. Dynasty, the wide receiver 58, respectively. We've seen the decline of Cooper Kupp. So we know why that's that. Now, Cooper Kupp in the eighth round is interesting. Now, there's a narrative that some folks are out there saying that he's playing with revenge. He wants to get back at McVay. And that's cool. That could be your moral compass of being, you know, going into the season as a motivator. But I don't know if we've seen Cooper Kupp, you know, bounce back since that 2021 season. So, Okada, are you in or out on Mr. Cooper Kupp?
Kupp's the guy that I feel a little confused about. And I would ask you to clarify things for me, but I know you hold some deep bias against Cooper Kupp. However, I also know you're a mad professional and can separate that on this show and give me the bare truth. Here's where I'm at with Cooper Kupp. I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a push to where I'm not out. And if I'm looking for a wide receiver in this range and a couple other guys, maybe that I like a hair or two more than him, are gone, I think it's likely that I will draft him. That being said, I'm not looking to draft him. I'm not targeting him, and I'm not super excited about him. And it, you know, it's because the history is getting a little bit tiresome on him. He has not played more than 12 games since 2021.
Yikes.
That's starting to, I don't like to use the term injury prone. That's starting to borderline on injury prone. It's getting a little hairy, and he turns 32 years old on this coming or last Sunday. This Sunday or last Sunday?
I did not say
happy. Yeah, birthday, Cooper Kupp. Nope, unfortunately, it's not that happy of a birthday for an NFL player because he's 32. That's getting up there. We talked last show about how I think he's going to have to split slot time with JSN. I think it's likely Cup sees a little bit more just because of that. He's older and needs help getting open a little more than JSN, but he's not going to dominate, I don't think, the slot because JSN is so good there and fits there very well. And I think Cup will suffer on the outside trying to get open. And that's, you know, not to mention that I think Seattle's going to be a run first team. I don't particularly trust Sam Darnold to produce multiple stud receivers in this offense. So for all those reasons, I'm not excited. That being said, the price at wide receiver 49 is insanely low. And all the guys in this range also have tons of question marks. You've got Brandon Ayuk, who we brought up and talked about. You've got Darnell Mooney. Emeka Ebuka, whom we don't know how many targets he's going to see behind two studs. Michael Pittman, whose quarterback maybe can throw the ball as well as I can, but maybe not. All these guys have big question marks. But largely speaking, I think ideally I'm just not targeting a receiver in this range. But if I'm on the clock at like the very end of the eighth round and he's there and Jaden Higgins is gone, who I'd rather have, I think there's a good chance I will take Cooper Kupp. And I will say this as a very specific example of putting my money where my mouth is. I'm in a best ball underdog draft right now, and I had Marvin Harrison Jr. and I was waiting for Kyler Murray. I tweeted about this. I'm a little bit tilted right now, Laquan. I'm not
going to. No, I saw that. I'm going to say, how you feeling?
I was waiting on Kyler Murray to get the stack. And I was looking at the guy ahead of me who was taking forever to draft, and I was glancing at his roster, and I realized he had Trey McBride. And I was like, gosh darn it, he's going to draft Kyler Murray, isn't he? And he did. He sniped the pick ahead of me. And so then I was sitting there like, what am I going to do? I got to find my rebound opportunity. And I looked at the ADP, and I was like, you know what? Cooper Kupp's there. And I think he's probably going to see 90 to 110 targets, somewhere in that range. That's pretty good. I guess, and I drafted him, and I think he'll have some good weeks. So I'm not excited about him at all, but at this price, I'm like, sure. So I call it a push. I'm not super in or super out. Feel like I know where you stand, but give
me I'm out. But here's the thing, and here's why I'm out, because availability is your best ability. We've talked about this on the show with many of the players that we had in question last week when Fantasy Court was going on. I cannot put any eggs in the basket for Cooper Kupp this season anymore. And that's not because I'm being a biased Rams fan. It's because, man, your last season fully healthy was 2021. That is 33 games played out of the possible 51 games that you had on the table for you. And this is where I get frustrated at, because like, even when he did return back from injury last season, we saw the decline in 1080p. 4K right there, that he is not that same guy as the Triple Crown player. And when I'm in this range, man, and I got to say, it's the wide receiver dead zone that I'm calling it, because you do have Cooper Kupp in the same bag and range as Emeka Ebuka or Keon Coleman. These guys have question marks, but I rather take in this round where I'm not reaching for some of these other rookies that are going in the first 5 to 6 rounds. This is the eighth round. Trey Harris is staring right there. This is going to be the X wide receiver for Justin Herbert. This is going to be Greg Roman on the sticks, wanting to have that ability to run the ball, but actually make big plays downfield. Trey Harris is that guy. Ladd will be the security blanket. So volume is heading towards this young man's way. I have no fear about Mike Williams. Please don't mention Quentin Johnson's name ever again. This is not a Quentin Johnson podcast. Okada, we can agree on that, right? Like, come on. Like, yes. What are we doing? So how I look at this is that Cooper Kupp brings way too much risk rather than getting the reward that we're still living in the past of what the production that he has put on the table. Not I, because the Seahawks, again, they don't even have an identity on offense right now. I don't want JSN splitting time with Cooper Kupp. I don't want Cooper Kupp primarily playing outside on the perimeter, because it's like, he's not that guy you could throw in motion anymore. We saw Puka take over that role. We saw Robert Woods, you know, intermittently swap roles with Cooper Kupp playing that Z motion. Cooper Kupp needs to live and breathe out of the slot to be productive. And if that's not guaranteed on the table, I have no reason to take him.
I did not expect any less from you. I appreciate the candor.
I didn't bash him, though, for being a traitor.
I will say, using Trey Harris as a way to convince me to get out is a smart move, because I do really like Trey Harris, and I think he's getting grossly underdrafted right now. Like a round behind Cup, but to your point, like, I would consider taking him over Cup. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I still think I might take him every now and then, but I'd rather not get too overexposed, because
if it ain't Trey Harris, then it's Jaden Higgins. I'm taking one of them.
I love Jaden Higgins. I'm smashing over all these names that we just used. I love Jaden Higgins.
Thank you. You seen the tapes. You seen the minicamp film. Like, that boy is out there all hand, I should say, because the one hander he had on the sideline, that's just 1% of this guy's power. And I say power because he's one of the most physical wide receivers out there right now. And he has that size and speed to be able to do the things that you're seeing him do. So, we can go on the Jaden Higgins rant, me and you, man. But we're going to keep this train moving, man. And the next guy where I think we can agree, like, I think this isn't a spoiler, Deebo Samuel. All right. A lot of folks are out just off rip of default, but there are some folks out there that believe in the new situation with Cliff Kingsbury, with Jaden Daniels, this whole offense, Terry McLaurin. There's even a crowd that believes Terry McLaurin's going to hold out, and then Deebo becomes the wide receiver one. Stop. The fantasy streets are getting crazy. That's the dark side over there. Please don't. No. Okay. But Deebo Samuel, Okada, does he interest you in round 6 or 7? Because, like, he's in that turn area, early 7th, back end 6th. Like, are you interested in taking him off the board at wide receiver 39?
Somehow, a lot of these guys, and maybe because I've written like a dozen moves to make columns now, but a lot of these guys have shown up in my moves to make column over at FTN, talking dynasty buys and sells. And there is some degree to which that colors my opinion in redraft as well. But sometimes it's not so much the case, because redraft and dynasty are different. For Deebo, I was in on him as a buy in dynasty. I am in on him for redraft. He had a down season last year. It wasn't great, but he's done that twice before. And the subsequent year, he bounced back big time both times to finish as a top 12 wide receiver the successive year afterwards. So I don't think we can put too much stock in these down years for Deebo Samuel. And it's a little bit of a mixed bag, like the reasoning. Sometimes he's dealt with injury, but also he's just like a very unique player. And the way that offense and scheme plays out in any given year and the other personnel that's there, I think it can have more of an effect on him than it might have on a more prototypical wide receiver. And like you mentioned, the people who are saying, Deebo might become the wide receiver one. No, he's not going to ever become the wide receiver one, because that's not who he is. But that's not what we want for him necessarily. What we want is for him to be that weapon, that unique, very unusual, one, pretty much one of a kind offensive weapon who gets a bunch of screens and a bunch of rush attempts potentially even. So now, to me, he is the clear wide receiver 2 for Jaden Daniels, which is a pretty nice spot to be in.
That's and a pretty nice quarterback.
And a perfect weapon as well for Cliff Kingsbury. This is a great offensive mind to use Deebo's skill set, in my opinion. Last year, Jaden Daniels in his rookie season threw the 6th most screen passes per game in the NFL and had the 2nd highest completion percentage on quick throws. Both of those things fit Deebo Samuel's skill set really well. I also think there's a good chance we get a lot of him in open space rushing opportunities where they're looking for a little more explosivity, because Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler aren't really those guys anymore. Brian Robinson is
spoiler alert.
Banger. Austin Ekeler is going to catch a few passes, but that's kind of it. So, and you know, he's been good off and on for San Francisco, competing with that list of names we mentioned before. That makes it hard, in my opinion, for the guys who were left, Brandon Ayuk and others, to be studs, because the volume's not that much. That available in San Fran. In Washington, Terry McLaurin, and that's kind of it. Like, are we afraid of Eckler's workload? We're afraid of Zach Ertz? I don't think so. So he's going in a similar range to like Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pierce, all his former teammates, as well as guys like Jacoby Myers, the Jaden Reed, Matthew Golden, Packers conundrum. I think I prefer Deebo to all of them. I think he is in the best offense with the best quarterback and has the most upside for touches, and has been a wide receiver 1 multiple times in the past. I consider me fully in on Deebo Samuel. I'm drafting him there and higher.
Boy, do we disagree. No. We are out on Deebo. What? Really? Because here's one thing about your angle. Now, you
hit me.
Said that they need somebody explosive out of that backfield. Now, the workload with Deebo has been consistent since 2021, his breakout season. He's going to get at least 40 rushing attempts. But when you look at the numbers, he's not that explosive anymore. He's not that efficient anymore because we have thick Deebo now. So I think that Cliff Kingsbury does have a creative offensive mind, okay? Because I give him credit because against a division rival, you know, you're watching the Cardinals games and you're seeing them get Greg Dortch, Rondell Moore, obviously Hollywood Brown, DeAndre Hopkins. There was a lot of stuff going on with that offense in terms of creativity and roles. But here's the thing. I don't think we're going to be able to see the product that Kyle Shanahan built up and had be this huge, you know, explosion of talent with Deebo Samuel in 2021 having that breakout season. We have just seen nothing but decline. And even when guys like Juwan Jennings and guys like Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle were banged up and Debo's the sole provider there, we didn't see like that explosive Deebo. We got thick Deebo. We haven't seen that guy that we're all yearning for because in the sixth and seventh round, I'm not even batting the eye that way. Like I get the new toy in town and you have a great quarterback. And obviously the debate between Jaden Daniels and Brock Purdy, it's clearly going to be Jaden Daniels. But at the end of the day, it's about utility. How is he going to be able to be explosive out of that backfield if we haven't seen that? How is he going to be that receiving threat that he's never been? Like he hasn't been a guy that I think has a complete route tree. He's quick. He has quick. He is durable at times where, you know, he's not running full speed into linebackers. But I do think there's opportunity here for you to pivot to a different position if you're looking for a wide receiver in this range. Even at tight end here, this is where Sam Laporta is going. This is our guy. Like we become the Laporta goats. Like, you know, like we're part of that like little circle. And I feel like there's just better options. Like, I don't see myself taking Deebo off the board, Okada.
I am starting to question your commitment to the volume is king, Maxim Laquan. Who else is getting the volume here? I understand he might not be as efficient as he used to be, but this is what I'll say is my last note. Because, in fairness, everything you've said is correct. Like, I don't think this is prime Deebo anymore. Now, am I convinced by the one training camp Twitter video that he's, you know, one Popeye's biscuit from a tight end or whatever the fuck it could have
been? Yes.
I don't know about that, but here's what I will say. Man signed a $17 million contract with this team. They don't do that to have him be a, you know, tertiary 60 target, 30 rush attempt guy. I don't think. Yes. I think they expect him to be a key weapon in an offense that has Terry McLaurin and very little else of any level of excitement and is run by Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels, which to me, like Jaden Daniels might be one of the best passing quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Everybody gets excited about his rushing ability and his fantasy upside because of that, but he is an unbelievable passer of the football.
Yeah.
The wide receiver two for that guy in an offense I expect to be good. Kind of like it.
Now let me bring you to roadblocks. Where are the touchdowns coming from? We need touchdowns from Deebo to be fantasy relevant because, again, he's not a wide receiver threat anymore. We've seen where they're going to go. This thing on the rundown. Scary Terry taking shots.
Terry McLaurin saw less volume last year than he ever has. He had scored somewhere between 4 and 7 receiving touchdowns every other year of his career. And then last year in 2024, he scored 13. Now, some of that we can attribute to Jaden Daniels, but that volume does not equate to that touchdown level by any means. His touchdowns are going to come down. They're going to swing right over to my boy Deebo. There we go. That's where we're getting.
Oh, my God. We'll see.
But you got another roadblock.
Oh, the other roadblock. Now, when you come to rushing, like the rushing upside, the duality of him. Okay, yeah. I see Austin Eckler. You could still dump it off to him as a screen. You could still dump it off to him. He was very serviceable last season. Brian Robinson, he has a nose for the red zone. Like that's kind of his job. That's his role. Spoiler alert. Look, Okada is spoiling. Like for folks that are listening and not watching, his body language every time Brian Robinson comes up, he's spoiling the next segment. Okay, like geez, chill out, man. My guy gets shot.
I love him. I love Brian Robinson.
All right. Yeah. There's a joke there. I'm just going to let that bus go by after what I just said. But anyway, the roadblock is the rushing upside for him that makes him such a fantasy asset. And I just don't see that being that when you have a running quarterback and two running backs who've been serviceable. I'm not going to say they've been great. They've been serviceable out of that backfield. And if they wanted to change or address the run game, they would have taken them in the draft with this deep running back group. They didn't do it. So that's my issue here with Debo.
Here's what I know, Laquan. We're only 4 episodes into this podcast together. However,
yeah,
we need to come up with some sort of bet system, and we need to lock this in as our first bet. Debo Samuel over under something. We'll over lock under... it in. We'll figure out the stakes and we'll lock it in. I don't know what the stakes are yet. Okay. I'm easy locked in for me. Korean barbecue is one of my favorite things in the entire world. So I'll
oh, okay. I'm new to the scene. I've okay. had a good one. Yeah.
Okay. Miss Kim
barbecue over here by my spot. It was good. So, you know, shout out to them. And they've become daily rotation. Not daily, weekly rotation. I kind of want to eat it.
Do we want to say top 40 half PPR?
No. I want to get very specific here with this because I think the roadblocks that we're hitting on. So I think Debo, right? Let's get it down. So Debo, I think, will have less than 30 rushing attempts.
Okay.
I think Debo will have total touchdowns. Like, this is catching and rushing, whatever. Mm-hmm. He will have less than 6. Less than 6.
Less than 6. So you're saying 29 and a half rush attempts and 5.5 total touchdowns. I will take the over.
All right.
Okay.
This is documented. This is documented. Whoa. This is time stamped and everything. Let's man. Go. I think Debo is not the D. Like, I think this is going to be a situation where you see a guy come in, get paid. This is the Allen Robinson experience all over again. And I know that was a train wreck for the Rams. Like, that's a very harsh comparison, but that's the most recently burned in my brain of where I was in on a guy that had a similar ADP, if I'm not mistaken, at the time, where there was some risk, but where I don't think we're going to get that product that we've known and loved, man. It just is what it is, man. But we spent most of the time on Debo, and we have one more guy, and let's take a quick break, man, and come back and finish off this wide receiver vet. Are we in or we are out? And we are back to finish this off, man, because we have another segment for the running back vets to get into. Are we in or we are out? This is at cost, at ADP. This is today's basically ADPs. Obviously, this will change as we get further into July and August preseason camp reports. I cannot wait for training camp, but man, our last guy. I think we can agree on this one. I thought we was good on the last one.
Oh, boy.
But obviously, we were just split brain on that one.
I'm
but
scared.
DK Metcalf, fourth round. Let me emphasize on that. The fourth round.
Okay.
Wide receiver 25, DK Metcalf. Are you in or are you out?
I'm concerned, Laquan, because the way you were emphasizing fourth round suggests to me that maybe we're on a different page here. Listen. Oh, God. With Aaron Rodgers at the helm last year in New York, Garrett Wilson saw 154 targets, and Davante Adams saw 114 targets in just 11 games with Rodgers after being traded. That was nearly 20 targets a game just to those two guys over the course of the season. Aaron Rodgers is now the quarterback for DK Metcalf. Now, the offensive coordinator for DK Metcalf is Arthur Smith. Trust me when I say,
the fantasy boogie.
I hate Arthur Smith. Everyone in fantasy hates Arthur Smith. He is not good for passing games. I will be very transparent with that. I looked it up. His time as play caller for offenses, he has ranked like bottom 4 in the league almost every single year. It is not pretty. However, Laquan, there is no one else to throw to in Pittsburgh. The corpse of Robert Woods. Calvin Austin III, Roman Wilson. Most of our listeners probably don't even know those guys' names. Jalen Warren, no. Caleb Johnson, a few catches, probably. Pat Freiermuth, no. He's a touchdown catcher, sure. I like him to score 5 touchdowns, maybe. But he's not a target hog. So, yes, there is going to be a decrease in the overall pass attempts in this offense. They're not going to throw as much as Aaron Rodgers did in New York last year. I understand that. However, DK Metcalf is going to see, is going to see a 25 to 30% target share. Even in an Arthur Smith offense, I ran the numbers on his on the pass attempts in his offenses. That means around 140-ish targets. When he saw that many targets in 2022, even without great efficiency and just scoring six touchdowns, he finished as the wide receiver 16 in PPR. I think he could see a very similar season in 2025. Maybe not that efficient because Rodgers is out of his prime and the offense I don't trust all that much. Maybe he didn't score a touchdown, ton of touchdowns. Maybe it's just six. But at this target volume, that still makes him the wide receiver 16 in PPR. He's going as the wide receiver 25 here in round four. That makes him a value to me. I'm locking in DK Metcalf easily there. Please tell me, Laquan, that you are in with me on this.
I am out.
Oh my God.
I am so out that I am exposed, but anti-exposed of any type of shares of DK Metcalf in 2025. Oof. And this is why, because you hit the nail on the head. There's nobody else there. Okay. But I love volume. Volume is king. But this always goes back to that question. How valuable are these targets going to be? Because look, we've seen the decline of Aaron Rodgers on the deep ball. And we know that's DK's profile. He is the deep target. He was number one in deep targets last year as per FTN Stats Hub. When you look at the deep target rate for Aaron Rodgers last season, it wasn't great. His completion percentage wasn't great. Now, on the Jets last season, on passes 10 plus air yards, which are basically downfield passes, he had a 39% completion rate. He had 11-7 touchdown interception ratio. That's not great. This isn't Aaron Rodgers of the back in 2021, where he had a 14-3 touchdown interception on that with a 49% completion rate. This is not Aaron Rodgers of the old, where you have DK Metcalf that only lives and breathes off of that deep ball. That's where most of his production comes from. 52% of his routes were all vertical routes last season. That's majority of what he is doing out there. What else are you doing? So the route tree is limited in a freaking Arthur Smith offense, a low pass volume offense that's just been kind of mid since he's left Tennessee, which was his last time that he had a wide receiver one product in AJ Brown. That's a very long time, Okada. And things haven't changed with Mr. Arthur Smith, the fantasy boogeyman. Like, he hates us. He hears you, Okada. He's everywhere. He's like the freaking Santa, but what is the other one? The bad Santa is the Kraken. The Krampus, that is him. he is the crack in the fantasy streets as well. He is opening the floodgates and destroying everything that we have in hopes and dreams of a wide receiver one being produced in his offense. I cannot take that with a 42-year-old man that just wants to be the center of attention and then the biggest talk in media, the Voldemort of the fantasy streets. Like, no, I'm not putting any trust into that in the fourth round. The fourth round, Okada. This many, Aaron Rodgers.
I see it. It's one less than five. Here's the thing. Aaron Rodgers and Arthur Smith might be the most hateable duo to lead an offense in the entire NFL. Maybe ever. Forget right now this season. Maybe ever. But DK Metcalf's still going to see 130, 140, 150 targets. Is this not the case?
Yeah.
And I will say this. To your point about the downfield passing. DK Metcalf's ADOT last year was 13.1. That was the second highest of his career. When we think of him, we think of that. If I expect that to be true, I expect what you said to be accurate for this offense. I don't think Rodgers is going to be great at throwing the ball down the field, and I don't think that DK Metcalf is going to be great down the field as a result. However, what I will say is, if he were to be that good, that efficient, that downfield stud with a stud downfield quarterback at the target volume he's going to see, he would be a locked and loaded wide receiver one. Because we aren't going to see that efficiency, I think that knocks him down to this wide receiver two, wide receiver three range, which still makes him a value where he's getting drafted. And what I'll point out is that one year that I brought up in 2022, where he saw 141 targets and he wasn't that efficient, his ADOT was 11.2. That was the lowest of his career. But it was his best year for fantasy, and it was with Geno Smith having that comeback player of the year. I think that's what we see here, is that DK Metcalf, who, yes, he can be a stud downfield, but he can also get open and run after the catch. He's super fast. He can take screens for really nice gains. I don't think it's going to be efficient. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I think we're going to hate Arthur and Aaron all year, but you don't need that great of efficiency, and you don't need more than six touchdowns when you're getting this kind of volume and still finishing ahead of wide receiver.
This ain't on the rundown. Let's play a little quick game.
Ooh, right, really? Okay, hit me.
DK Metcalf or Jalen Waddle?
Ooh, that's a really tough one because the Tyreek Hill situation is like a little bit up in the air right now, but I will go DK Metcalf.
DK Metcalf, Devontae Smith.
Dang, you're making these tough. I have to go with the volume and say DK Metcalf by a hair.
DK Metcalf or Courtland Sutton?
DK Metcalf, easily.
DK that's, Metcalf. That one's easy. DK Metcalf or Calvin Ridley?
DK Metcalf. Bro, you got to give me some tough ones. Come on, give me some tough.
I got you at Devontae Smith. I'm really surprised with the Courtland Sutton thing because, you know, I'm a big believer. Courtland Sutton saw the end zone last season. That's all we were waiting for. We just needed him to catch touchdowns. I think that's still on the table versus where DK Metcalf, that's an area where it lacks.
I agree that Courtland Sutton, if you asked me, who will score more receiving touchdowns, Courtland Sutton or DK Metcalf, and you made me bet on it, I'd probably bet on Sutton, but I think it's by like one or two touchdowns, and I don't think that's enough to make up for what might be like 30 or 40 fewer targets, in my opinion.
Wow. All right. All right. The man has spoken. It is DK Metcalf season. I am completely out. We know where I stand. And this
we need
is
to find a player that we're reversed on so I can be a hater.
Yeah. We need to see Haterade come out of Matt Okada, man. But we're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back with the running back vets. Running backs are on deck for in or we are out, man. A very spicy wide receiver debate between me and this guy. I mean, Okada, we cannot agree on DK Metcalf. It's not happening. The fourth round. Do I need to show you what round he's going at again? Right here. The fourth round.
I see that. It is.
No. No way. No way. Hopefully we find some agreement on these running backs because this is a nasty work list. And I say it's nasty work because there are some guys on here that you really have to debate to take them off the draft board or where they're going because you need that running back three. You need that running back two in some of these instances as well where some of these guys are going. So it's like, all right, Najee Harris, you're on deck. The 10th round, running back 36. He is technically, right now, the Chargers RB1. You have an RB1 going in the 10th round.
True. I've seen the
depth
chart.
Are you in or are you out on Najee Harris?
All right. Well, let's preface this very quickly with that depth chart is poppycock. Okay. Omarion Hampton is the RB1 here. I have no concerns. However, I will say this. I am less out on Najee Harris than I thought I was prior to the prep for this podcast. However, I am still out on Najee Harris. And here's kind of how it broke down for me. Sometimes with these players, particularly like the RB2s that we might see getting a significant amount of workload, one of the most effective strategies to figure out what you really think is to do projections. And so I do projections. I haven't finished them for this year, but I do them every year for every player on every team. And I think it can help a ton. I think Najee Harris, and this is the general consensus, probably finishes somewhere around 150 to 160 touches. For an average back, that typically equates to like somewhere around 130 to 140 PPR fantasy points, which in a given year means right around RB36, which is his ADP. So it kind of makes sense projection-wise. Here's my problem. I lean to the lower end of the projection spectrum for touches for him because I really like Omarion Hampton. I've already said, I think the depth chart is nonsense, and I think Hampton will be the clear number one. I also lean on the lower end of the efficiency spectrum for Harris versus an average running back because I think he's never really been that explosive and is kind of more washed now than he ever was. I don't think he's great. The FTN deep data numbers suggest that he's not great. So I don't hate him. I just don't. And I think there are guys in that range who maybe aren't as reliable but are more exciting. Depending on what your build looks like, maybe Najee Harris is kind of important too. Maybe you've gone zero RB and he's not a bad zero RB running back. But for me, I'd rather be avoiding him and guys in his range and going to a different position, maybe getting an Evan Ingram, who I really like at tight end, a Dak Prescott, who I kind of like at quarterback, maybe reaching a little bit on Kyle Williams, who I really like in New England, despite how much I said about Stephon Diggs' volume. I think Najee Harris to me is just like, this isn't a terrible price, but it just does not get me excited. And I lean a little bit below this price. So at this price, I have to be out. Do we agree, Laquan?
We agree. I am out. I am out for certain reasons, though, because like Let's say you are the believer that, you know, Greg Roman and that Chargers offense are going to run the piss out of that ball. Okay, great.
Possible.
And you're trying to lead with volume. That's not guaranteed when you have a freaking incredible Hulk, a.k.a. Brock Lesnar, behind you on the depth chart. Like, ugh. Volume isn't guaranteed with that theory.
Air quotes
that
if for going, the non-video watchers. Air quotes on the...
There you go. Oh, I forgot. My bad. But listen, like, I can't draft him here. And I see the appeal because you know they're going to run the ball. But Najee, like, he's not a bad running back, right? But he's more of a plotter. Like, he's more of a guy that you could just hand the rock to, get us a first down. It's third and four. We need you. Come in. But he's not the guy that we saw his rookie season where he saw over 70 balls. Like, he caught 70 balls from broken Ben Roethlisberger. That's where the PPR upside gave us a boost of why we wanted a guy that's going to be a workhorse, durable, and he catches the ball. But it's been so long. It's been so long since we've seen that. He's barely cracked 40 catches in a season. So it's like, since then, it's like, when you look at the 10th round, you want an RB3. You want a guy that's going to be reliable that can come in to fill in for one of your players on a bye or injury. You're going to be having a guy on your bench or having a guy in your lineup that his job is not secure. You're going to be sitting here making terrible decisions in the 10th round where you know the running backs are dry. So you address your RB3 way earlier than you actually need to than the 10th round to not deal right with this crap. I am not looking for a running back in the 10th round of the name of Najee Harris. And if I am, I'm going to be rolling the dice on other guys. Because look, when you look where Najee's going, right? You got Zach Charbonnet on the board. You have Javonte Williams on the board. You have Travis Etienne maybe on the board. You have Bashaul Tootin maybe on the board in there. Even Ramondre Stevenson I would entertain more because it's not even the lock that Travion Henderson's taken on this workload as a RB1. I do think, you know, these guys that I just named off have higher upside and security in their actual roles. And there's an understanding there that, you know, Najee Harris is on a high power run offense, you know, and we have to look at Greg Roman. This is his show. He's not going to see any catches out of the backfield because Greg Roman has made that clear. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens, I got it right here. Their running back target percentage was at 14% between 2019 and 2021 when he was there as the OC. That was 31st in the league. You look at where the Chargers ranked last year in their running back target percentage. Yep. They ranked 31st at 15%. Jesus, yep. It's not there for him. It's not going to be on the table for him to have any upside with a Brock Lesnar behind him. That is why I am out on Najee freaking Harris. I'm done.
Beauty. I'm glad we found the same page. Thank goodness.
Next up, Kenneth Walker. I think we entertained this quite a bit on the last pod. I've aired my grievances, but when you look at his ADP, it's not terrible. He's in that range is where you have some questions about some guys, Chase Brown, Joe Mixon, et cetera, et cetera. Kenneth Walker has an injury history, and it's pretty lengthy at this point where it's like it's a frustration that he's an RB2 for your team and an RB2 in value as a fantasy asset, but we know he could be an RB1. So it's very frustrating to draft Kenneth Walker. Are you in or are you out?
I think you already know the answer for me here, Laquan. I am comfortably in. In fact, in is probably a little bit of an understatement because Kenneth Walker might be one of my flag plant players of the 2025 fantasy season. The way that I've been talking him up, buying him in Dynasty, drafting him ahead of ADP. I've talked about it. You know, we talked about it last show. A lot of the reasons why I think the Seahawks offense is shifting towards the run. I think he has always been good when on the field. And the only question mark is, will he stay healthy? If he plays 15 games, I think he returns value on this ADP. So he can even miss a couple and still do it. If he plays 17 games, he's going to blow this ADP out of the water. He is going to be an RB1, in my opinion. And I will say this, for those who do or do not know, I used to do a podcast with a guy named Matthew Betts, the Fantasy PT on Twitter. You may have seen his work. He works for the Fantasy Footballers now. He's their injury expert. When we were talking about all this stuff, I sent him a text. How do you feel about Kenneth Walker? Because there's a lot going around these streets right now. He's dealing with the groin injury in camp already. Everyone thinks he's injury prone. Are you concerned? He said to me, I'm not all that concerned. When he tells me he's not all that concerned, I throw the injury concerns out the window for myself, and I tell everybody else that will listen to do the same. Yes, he could get injured. Guess who else could get injured? Every single running back in fantasy drafts. It happens to everybody.
That is true.
I'm not going to base my whole draft strategy, and I'm not going to completely avoid a value player only out of fear of that injury history that I believe likely doesn't even rear its head. Yes, I'm in on Kenneth Walker big time.
Okay. I'm in as well, but under certain circumstances.
Okay.
He has to be literally my second running back behind a workhorse. And I mean that, like, okay. I've had to draft Saquon Barkley. I had to already draft the Bijan Robinson. So this is like for early round guys where Kenneth Walker's kind of sliding at on that turn. I would have to have that security in me to take this gamble on Kenneth Walker because the dude is talented. He could be the workhorse there in Seattle. And Zach Charbonnet is a great serviceable back that showed up and showed out in times of need last year. But we need to get on track here with Kenneth Walker. And if I'm going to roll the dice here, it's going to be one of those situations I need to have security in my mind. And even probably a couple rounds after that, I need to go in with some type of high upside and a running back like a Travion Henderson to play behind a Kenneth Walker pick that I took the gamble in the early round. So it's like one of those things, like it's based on your roster build. How are you going to attack the draft? Are you going to have a pivot plan if A, B, and C doesn't work out and you're left with Kenneth Walker as a guy that can have that RB1 upside for a season? If we get 17 games from Kenneth Walker, my God, we're looking at a top 10 running back. Like, seriously, like that's where the talent lies. He's getting catches out of the backfield for all you PPR folks. He's explosive at times. He wasn't last season, but he was a little banged up here and there. But he can be a guy that can handle that workload and find the end zone. So I am definitely in on Kenneth Walker just on based on certain circumstances. Now, moving on to spoiler alert, you mentioned his name earlier, you know, for the folks that's watching and you've seen the body language when Aaron Jones popped up. I mean, are you in or are you out?
I'm in on Aaron Jones. This is an interesting one for me, and it's one that I didn't really know until I really broke it down in prep for this podcast. When we put Aaron Jones on the dock, I was like, man, I don't know how I feel about Aaron Jones. I could see him being really good. I could see him being really bad. He's kind of near the age cliff. What do I actually think? So then I looked into it. He was the RB14 last year in the year he turns 30. He is currently going as the RB29. Yes, he turns 31 this year. That's another year past the cliff. So that should play into things a little bit. His efficiency should drop a little bit. But in fairness, yeah. Aaron Jones has room for his efficiency to drop. He has had 4.5 plus yards per carry every single year of his career, including last year at age 30. And over the last four seasons, including that last year at age 30, he has averaged 48 catches, 857 receiving yards, and 4 receiving touchdowns per season. That is real nice work in half or full PPR. I expect little to nothing to change in terms of this Minnesota offense, because I think Kevin O'Connell is what really matters there, and he will make do with whatever quarterback he's given, and I think J.J. McCarthy is actually a good one. I think Jordan Mason will steal some carries and some touchdowns, but not enough to drop Aaron Jones by 80-plus fantasy points, which is what he'd have to drop by to go from RB14, where he was last year, to RB29, where his ADP is. I believe he belongs in low-end RB2 territory, like maybe RB23 or RB24, but that makes him a value where he's going right now. Tony Pollard and another guy who we're about to talk about, so I won't say his name, are going in this similar range, as well as guys like Brandon Ayuk and Darnell Mooney that we talked about earlier that I'm not that excited about. To me, I'd rather have Aaron Jones. This is one of my favorite guys in this dead area, in my opinion, because I think he's shown it year in and year out. The offense is still going to be good. And even if he loses some efficiency because of the age, I think he makes up for it with just how good he's always been and how good this offense should be. So I'm in on Aaron, but I don't know how you feel.
I'm in as well.
Okay.
I'm in.
We're on a streak.
All right. I'm in. You know why? It's not because we share the same last name or anything like that, but I'm in just based on what you said. He is still very good. He is still a very serviceable running back, and he is your last hope. He is your last hope in that running back dead zone to just give you clarity of your running back room. Like if he could be in the seventh or eighth round as my RB3, boy, we're cooking, right? Like yeah. Jordan Mason's there. And I think that they traded for him because he played a serviceable role for San Francisco. He played that role to the ultimate level, and that's to be a backup that can come in just in case. Because we've seen Aaron Jones go through his injuries with his hamstrings and et cetera. So they're getting a beast at the position as well to play that backup. Aaron Jones is still Aaron Jones, and Aaron Jones was very serviceable last year. He's being drafted as an RB3 in a sense where you know you're going to lock him in as an RB2. Most weeks, he'll probably be locking up your flex position because, like how you said, and the wide receivers, we're in that range of like, Jordan Addison, DUI case, Darnell Mooney. Can we get more out of what he had last year? There's question marks at that wide receiver position. So Aaron Jones is an absolute lock for me. We are in. Look at that. We agree.
I will say, by the way, importantly, with regard to the Jordan Mason situation, I think a lot of people are going to start to freak out about that. And Jordan Mason's ADP would suggest that that is the case. Hello, we have a very, very familiar history of Aaron Jones and a guy behind him. His name was AJ Dillon for most of his career, who stole a lot of carries, stole a lot of rushing touchdowns, and Aaron Jones was still an RB1 year after year after year. So Jordan Mason can be AJ. I think Jordan Mason could easily be AJ Dillon. And if Aaron Jones were to suffer an injury, Jordan Mason would probably be better than AJ Dillon as the lead back. But until that happens, I think he's going to be what A.J. Dillon was behind RB1 Aaron Jones. And that means Aaron Jones can easily threaten for RB1 volume that's maybe RB2 production based off where he's at in his career now, just losing a little bit of the efficiency. But RB2 production is still better than where he's going in ADP. Like, to your point, getting him out as an RB3 is disgusting for me. In my opinion, that's incredible.
Wow. There's two different drafters for Jordan Mason. I'm drafting Jordan Mason at ADP. If I already have three running backs, I'm not drafting Jordan Mason trying to be cute and wait to get him as my RB2 or RB3. That'd be insane. Like, there is upside with Jordan Mason, but he is a high-end handcuff. Let's make that very clear. Jordan Mason is a high-end handcuff. And I do think with him stealing carries, it will be more efficient than when it was with A.J. Dillon taking carries from Aaron Jones. It might actually help this offense and have this offense be able to be in scoring opportunities a ton where they can both share that red zone and both be efficient. We've seen backfields have multiple running backs still live and breathe with the 1-2 punch in the red zone and both prosper off the touchdowns. So this is a smash here at ADP for Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason. Look, let his ADP keep creeping up to where I'm just like, all right, I'm out, you know, but if he stays where he's at right now, I'm okay. If I already have the three running backs locked in. So as an RB4, sure, I'll take him at cost. Now our last guy, spoiler alert again, we've been kind of mentioning and hinting in body language for the folks that are listening, like you got to watch us, man. The body language or something very closely you have to watch. I mean, we saw D'Amico Ryans kind of just expose himself with his body language about CJ Stroud and that shoulder, but we ain't going to get into that with this episode. But more so looking at Mr. Brian Robinson Jr. going as RB 30 in the eighth round. Okada, are you in or are you out?
I could not be more out, Laquan. This is not even like the Najee Harris situation where it was like, I mean, he kind of belongs here, but I'm not excited, so I'm probably not drafting him. No, this isn't even that. I have no interest in drafting Brian Robinson Jr. In 2023, he lucked into an RB21 finish thanks to an unusual production as a receiver. He scored 4 receiving touchdowns, which is not his thing. That disappeared last year because Austin Eckler and Zach Ertz ended up taking up a lot of those short area targets. Otherwise, outside of that year, he's been arguably just as injury riddled as Kenneth Walker, if not more so, but we don't talk about that. He's never topped 800 rushing yards. We don't really talk about that. He scored at an unusually high clip last year and still finished as RB29. I think he has very low upside. He cannot be an RB1. And I think he has just as much risk as other guys in this range, like Isaiah Pacheco, Tony Pollard, Aaron Jones, who we just talked about. To me, those guys all have risk, but they all have high-end RB2 to low-end RB1 upside. Brian Robinson Jr. just does not have that. And not even like if some guys get injured, then he has that. He doesn't even have that, in my opinion. because he's supposed to be the lead back in this offense. And you talked earlier about Deebo Samuel losing rush attempts to Jaden Daniels. I'm more concerned about Brian Robinson Jr. losing rush attempts to Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
Listen, this offense is going to be good. He's probably going to score 6 or 7 touchdowns. He'll have a decent number of carries that won't be exciting or explosive. He's just not anywhere near this for me. There are so many players I'd rather have both at this position who I just named, but also, as I said earlier, like quarterbacks and tight ends that I'd rather go for in this range if, you know, you've got your running back situation sorted out. So I'm not getting Brian Robinson Jr. absolutely anywhere. I think he's probably the only guy in this article, in this column. Let me scroll up. No,
spoiler,
he is the only guy in this whole show that I will never draft this season. I think I could find my way into drafting some of the other guys. No interest in Brian Robinson Jr. I'm all the way out.
I'm out too, fella. And for all those exact reasons. So I don't need to even go over that he barely cracked 700 yards each of his seasons here in the NFL. So it's one of those things where it's like, I see no appeal. I'm not looking at him at that point in the draft like, oh yeah, this is a steal. I'm like, oh no, I see why you're still here amongst the running backs that are available, and I'm still going to pivot. Like, I rather go with a Tony Pollard in this range. I rather go with an Aaron Jones that we were oozing off with a lot of praise on before we got to the subject. So it's more so of like, I can't see myself drafting him. I'd much rather wait a little later and get Austin Eckler, who has PPR upside. I mean, again, with Deebo there, it does make things a little bit wonky with that backfield, as crazy as it sounds. But I still think Austin Eckler still has utility in what we saw last season, where he still was fantasy relevant. I mean, 11 fantasy points per game. I'll take that. That's okay. You know, I just need him as a flex for when I have a guy on a bye week. So when you have your, you know, your roles and your RB3s and 4s and 5s or whatever, how your roster build is, like, they all have to serve their purpose. I don't see Brian Robinson serving his purpose at the maximum value, being that I'm looking for a guy who has RB1 or even RB2 high upside, and that's not living and breathing with him. So yeah, we're out. I'm glad we can agree, and then we could finish the show on a positive note, because that doesn't always often happen. Well, that listen, the rom-com of podcast will take that title, man, because listen, there's some goated ones. Crazy Stupid Love is goated up there, man. We talked about that, and nice. I definitely think, you know, we started off rocky, but here we are, finish on a positive note that Brian Robinson Jr. is the least draftable running back in the entire draft this summer. So, folks, please do not waste your picks. Listen, league meetings should be completed. Redraft season is upon us. And look, Dynasty folks out there, there's going to be constantly movement and adjustments. We talked about Malik Nabers with his toe injury, Kyren Williams getting that contract extension, maybe, and what these things may or may not do. So shift. So always stay on your toes. And of course, make sure you subscribe to FTN Fantasy. Go to the website, subscribe, man, and become a subscriber, and head to Underdog Fantasy right now. Use promo code FTN and get up to 1,000 bonus cash. Let's go, man. Okada, until next time.